All right, you're back in the DFSR here with an NFL podcast. It's Friday, September 28th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, DFSR.com/deals will get you podcast listeners a special podcast-only rate on our premium subscription. It's a free trial for 3 days, and then it's just $24.95 a month after that. That's a $5 per month savings for podcast listeners. So go check out DFSR.com/deals, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL, NHL right around the corner, NBA. We're getting excited about all covered in the one subscription package, premium chat, premium articles, all there, free for 3 days, and then just $24.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. We are going to roll through a game-by-game breakdown of the Week 4 main slate. So we had a Thursday night game, which went completely off the rails in terms of scoring. I guess we can talk about that for a second. But the Rams and the Vikings basically played like Baylor versus Texas A&M from like 3 years ago, like when the over-under set at 65, and you're just like not sure. If you're not sure, if you're like really considering they might hit the over at the end, like midway through the third quarter. The
way could it really go either way? Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of the case last night until the fourth quarter where they just stopped scoring. We could talk about that and kind of what that means for a second. And then we'll roll through all the games for Week 4's main slate, go through some of the injury news, some of the things you're going to want to consider, so maybe some GPP plays that we didn't cover in our cash game podcast from yesterday. Cash game podcast yesterday, we talked about Deshaun Watson. We talked about Drew Brees. We talked about Trubisky as a cheaper play. Kamara, Elliott, Gio Bernard, and Sony Michel at running back. And then Anunwa, Golden Tate a little bit, and then significantly Jarvis Landry for the wide receiver. So, oh, and Ertz and Ebron. So that's what, if we skip over those guys today, it's mostly because we talked about that at length as cash game plays yesterday. So go back and listen to that. All right, my long-winded intro is over. Buddy, the game last night, I mean, holy moly. Both the Cousins and Goff combined for almost 900 yards through the air, and that was with a fourth quarter that didn't really see a ton of scoring. I mean... We talked about these wide receivers and guys are going to get huge targets and how much teams are passing and how easy it is to pass. Can we just expect these 400-yard games just to be happening more and more? There's been 9 already this season.
Yeah, I mean, as I was looking through... Okay, so let me rewind for a second. I was looking at wide receivers for my premium article at DFSR.com this week and found that through 3 games, having 11... double-digit people, 11 players averaging double-digit targets per game, and another 4 averaging like 9.7 with 29 targets, that we are on a record-breaking pace for highly targeted wide receivers. 2 of the guys, of course, I started writing up the article and didn't finish it yesterday because other duties called here, DFSR, small shop and all that, and 2 of the guys I was writing up was Diggs and Thielen, and both of them obviously had extremely high targeted games. You know, Robert Woods was another guy. He had a great game too. I think that what we're mostly seeing now is that there used to be just a handful of guys that you could count on for those big target games. And now we're seeing that player pool has grown dramatically. And what we're trying to do right now, I mean, thankfully we have a system that can sort of take care of this, but we're trying to see how that increased target share for all those wide receivers is changing things and how it's changing how we approach the quarterback position. You know, it used to be that you needed to pay $9,000 at either quarterback or wide receiver to get something resembling safety, and maybe that's just not the case anymore. So, yeah, it's an exciting year from that perspective. Definitely not just the same old, same old.
2 quick stats, one I just queried real quick while you were talking, one I did last night. Last year, there were 10 quarterbacks that threw for over 400, or excuse me, 10 quarterback games of over 400 yards in a game. You know, some guys doubled up. That happened 10 times. It's already happened 9 times this season, and we haven't even gotten into Sunday's game. So, and then if you look at, I just picked this kind of random number, but players that have had over 15 targets in a game over the last 4 seasons, I'll do last season, there's about 12, and this year there's already been 9. So they're just going to blow these numbers are just getting blown completely out of the water. This year, there's guys that have 19 targets, 20 target games, and Thielen last night was a 19 targeter. So we're going to just be seeing guys that, there's going to be a lot more guys that crest up toward 20 targets in a game than we've ever seen in the past. And I think we talked about that yesterday and what that means for projections. And, I spent a lot of time thinking about this yesterday about how we, you know, do we just start projecting some of these guys for 15 targets a game? I think there's going to be some guys that it's going to be close. I think it's going to be close and maybe just correct to just start doing this, because if you're going to take some of them up to 10 or 11, like the Golden Tates of the world, then I think you just got to start taking the Thielens and the and Antonio Browns of the world up to 15 or so targets a game, which feels nuts, and we've never been in this territory before, and it sure seems like the new world order.
Yeah, I mean, 15, giving guys 15 targets a game, that would really be, that would be something else. You know, if you could count on that week in, week out, matchup independent, I think you'd need to really look in the mirror. Just as a frame of reference, the most targets ever in a single season was 208, and you'd basically be signing someone up for 240 targets over the course of a whole season. So,
yep, I'm with you, and it doesn't feel great. I'm not saying I'm going to do it today, but Antonio Brown has 16 and 17 in two of his 3 weeks, right? And so there's going to be a point when we're going to have to try to just figure out if that's the right number. We're not there yet, but, man, like I said, we are just getting pretty close. The numbers are crazy. All right, let's get through some of these game by games. We've got a lot to discuss. Not as much injury news hanging out there now. That being said, Friday is when the big stuff always hits. These guys that are limited in practice or haven't practiced is what Friday's usually when you can tell if those were maintenance days because they didn't practice or if there was actually something going on. And so that's usually through today is where we get a somewhat clearer picture. And that being said, I don't see too many surprises coming down the pike. Famous last words and all, but there just doesn't seem to be a ton hanging out there that we don't already know, but we can go game by game and see where some of these news is false. All right, Bengals go into the Falcons. This line started at 40. This is interesting about the way Vegas lines move sometimes. This line started at a 48 over and under and is now all the way up to 53. So it came up a full more than 10% since it opened, with some of the points actually points coming up on both sides, but a little bit more coming up on the Bengals side. They started at 21 and a quarter implied points. They're now up to 24 and a half. So a few more points came up for the Bengals here. This sure looks like all the makings of what could be a fantasy, just a lot of fantasy upside in a shootout. The over-under is huge. The conditions are great in the dome. Matt Ryan's coming off. A couple big passing games, specifically last week where he had 5 touchdowns. Give me some of your thoughts on this game. I feel like we're going to want some exposure for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, Ryan's a funny one. We've talked at length about him, it seems like, every single year. But you saw even last week, like when he went absolutely off, 5 touchdowns, 374 passing yards, he did so on only 35 attempts. And I just have to think it hasn't played out this way in the last 2 weeks because he's put up some really, really, really big games from a fantasy perspective. But I still think that even at the $8,100 price tag, you're much more in fair territory than you are in bargain territory. And the reason for that is there's basically just no game script that gives Matt Ryan, you know, 50 attempts the same way Kirk Cousins had last night. And ultimately, that will just limit your upside. Now, it helps that he's got a new tool there in Calvin Ridley. Obviously, he still has Julio Jones. I still think he's going to be a sneaky upside play. I just don't think you're going to want to count on him for like the 2 rushing touchdowns he had against Carolina. He might not get another rushing touchdown for the entire season. And all of a sudden, if there's not 2 rushing touchdowns in that game, that was like a 19-point game rather than a 32-point game. And last week looks like much more of an outlier. So, yeah, I like Ryan. I think probably more people are going to be dreaming on the upside there than is appropriate. I think Ridley, I mean, what are your thoughts on Ridley as a cash game play? The guy's 6,300, 8 targets last week, but also in about the best possible game script. So, I mean, is he a guy that we can count on going forward? I know Julio really might be banged up. But...
Nah. Okay, well, if Julio's banged up and you think that he's just decoying more out there, then I guess I don't really know how to weight that properly. So I think that Ridley will probably be more highly owned than he should be. I'd be very concerned. He's just completely getting outsnapped by Sanu and Jones. So everyone needs to understand this. Like he's just not on the field. So from a snap count perspective last year, Sanu, 59 snaps, Julio Jones, 54, Calvin Ridley, 42. He's very clearly just the wide receiver 3 slot guy, like bring in on passing down guy. Now, he did get targeted a lot. He was targeted 20% of the time on the snap, so that's great. But and he converted at a rate that you're just not going to see, 7 for 146 and 3. He's just not. Like the catches were great and the throws were great, and they threw it to him in the red zone, and I get all that. And this is about as great as you could possibly expect a guy to have at 42 snaps and 8 targets. Like there's just you'd be hard pressed to do any better than this. So while I'm fine with, I think he's a good play. I think, you know, a good thing about a good game is it cements playing time in that, like, okay, this is a guy we want to keep on the field, so that's a good thing. Maybe his snap count does go up. It did go up game after over game. I'd be, if he went four catches and for 40 yards this week with no touchdowns, would that surprise you? It wouldn't surprise me at all. So I think that that's kind of where I land. I don't really want to play him for cash games, mostly because why do I want to play a receiver that is just clearly behind the other two guys on the depth chart?
Yeah, I don't think you do. I just think people were even thinking he was even played in cash games last week. I understand he was cheaper, but I just think people just get so tempted by those monster games, and it's going to be really hard for people to turn away from it. But, you know, when it comes to Ridley, I feel like I'm going to be leaning more in the direction of, you know, I happened to miss out on it last week. I didn't play any Ridley last week, and that hurts, but I'm not going to double up on that mistake by paying more for a guy who I just don't necessarily believe in going forward. Another cheap receiver in this game, Tyler Boyd. Boyd had huge ownership in cash games for last week, coming off the 9-target game against Baltimore. He was less than 5,000 on FanDuel, so I'm just going to go ahead and call it just a full miss from our perspective. Followed it up with 7 targets, or followed a 9-target game up with 7 targets against Carolina, scored a touchdown, had 132 receiving yards. Boyd now 5,800. Is he in the same category of last week was really the week to play Boyd and you can't count on it going forward? Or is Adre Green and his lingering pelvis issue enough to tempt you with Boyd again?
I mean, still only saw 7 targets again, sort of in the Calvin Ridley territory, did about as great with 7 targets as you could possibly do, 6 for 132 and a touchdown. So great outcome. The snaps are there, so he's not in the same kind of situation. Like AJ Green only was on the field for 33 snaps. I think he did get hurt during the game. Boyd was out there 51.
Missed a lot of series in the second half.
Yeah, Boyd is clearly the wide receiver too over John Ross. So I think from that perspective, I prefer him probably to Ridley. And if Green is banged up, maybe. Yeah, it was a miss by us. It was a guy we discussed and not really, and just like, but not in earnest or anything. I don't know. This is where I'm really, if I say I don't know about these second wide receivers, is because I'm just being honest about trying to evaluate what the role of a second wide receiver is. It's just, it has completely changed this year, right? Like, it's just, things are just very different in the NFL. In the past, do I want a Tyler Boyd with AJ Green and Gio Bernard and all these other guys out there for the Bengals? No, not at this price, but this is not last year, not the year before. This is a totally new thing where the open air it out offenses, even guys like Andy Dalton are able to do it now. So if I sound like I'm hesitating or I don't really know, it's because this is what I spent all the last 2 weeks just really thinking about is, our wide receiver two is actually like last year's wide receiver ones, and the wide receiver ones from last year are like this totally new category that we need to consider. So I think that's what kind of where
I am. Yeah, and I think that's appropriate. When I was writing my wide receiver article, I did notice that two of the 11 guys that are averaging more than 10 targets a game this season are wide receiver twos. And that alone, it was Juju and Stephon Diggs. And another guy, Will Fuller, had double-digit targets last week. And obviously doesn't qualify because he didn't play every game this season. But yeah, I think there's simply more targets to go around. On this specific team, another guy we talked about for cash games yesterday, Giovanni Bernard, he only had 12 carries in a game that you figured he could have had more carries in. And it wasn't like it was a RBBC. No one else had any carries. So if the plan for the Bengals is to run the ball 12 times a game, there's just going to be more eats to go around for everyone, right? So yeah, maybe Boyd can sustain it. And maybe even add to it. But I think last week everything had to go right for him to turn 7 targets into 132 and a touch. And even though he had a touchdown the prior week, I mean, it's nice to see that he's used in the red zone, but not necessarily not necessarily thinking that too much has changed since week one when he had 5 targets and turned into 3 catches. So
Andy Dalton is 5,400 on DraftKings. We talked about Trubisky yesterday as, I liked him as a cash play just because of his mobility and the fact that he'd shown just maybe some ability to just complete passes at a higher percentage, though you rightfully said that the yards haven't been there. What do we think about Dalton, though? Dalton's got DraftKings points of 17.5, 20, I'm around the 27 and 21. He's 5,400 in a game where it sure seems like he's going to want to pass, and maybe that's just their plan to pass anyway, right? Like, even if they're kind of up in the game, and is Dalton a guy you can talk yourself into cash on DraftKings? 5,400, you get a nice savings. Does he strike you as maybe safer than Trubisky in a game script like this?
Oh, yeah, I would say so for sure. Dalton, so far this season, has had a really high floor. Worst game was 18 fantasy points. I guess I'm talking FanDuel points right now, so apologies. But his worst game was 243 for 2 touchdowns, and that's just a totally acceptable game. Carolina, that game could have been a lot better. He threw four picks, so you hate to see it, but still had 18 fantasy points. And obviously had a great game against Baltimore for 265 and four touchdowns. So I think you're seeing a pretty high floor from Dalton. And I think you're also seeing that even when things aren't going amazingly well, that they'll keep calling his number, right? You know, most games, a quarterback gets four picks. All of a sudden, it's just handoff central until the game is over. And with Dalton, that wasn't the case. I mean, they were kind of in a position where they had to throw a little bit, but they were still being pretty aggressive and throwing downfield. Bernard wound up with nine targets, but you probably could have seen that be a lot higher too. Yeah, I think Dalton, he's definitely erratic. He's going to burn you some weeks. Obviously, the accuracy is an issue with five picks through three games, but he's also just cheap too. So I think he's definitely a cash game consideration for me.
All right, we spent a lot of time in this game. We'll keep rolling through, but I think it's worth one more thing. I mean, Tevin Coleman, Julio Jones, guys like this, the Falcons do have a 28.5 total. Jones has not really gotten there in his price the last couple weeks. How much does Ridley, I mean, we talked about Ridley, but how much does Ridley's emergence. How much does Ridley's emergence maybe cut into Jones going forward if they just have another option there?
Yeah, I mean, for all our concerns about Ridley's low target share, Jones had just six targets last week. And he's another guy I was writing up in that wide receiver article. He's averaging more than double-digit targets per game, but went from 19 to 9 to 6 targets over the course of 3 weeks. And one thing we've seen about Julio over the course of his career is that he will play with all sorts of like kind of lingering, nagging sort of health things.
Yep.
The calf injury doesn't seem like that big a deal, but for a guy like him who just targets can fall off a cliff in a way that you don't see from guys like Antonio Brown, I would be a little bit hesitant to play him for cash games, you know, regardless of how high the total is. And Coleman, I mean, he's funny. Like, I don't want to fall into the trap of we got him for 1,300 or less, and it was like only okay in the past. But last week, 15 carries for just a terrible 33 yards. The efficiency has been really rough for him. You know, the Philly game, he had a 9 carry for 19 yard game. Not where I want to be for 7,200, I don't think.
Yep, I think I agree. Let's move on. Bucks go in and play the Bears. We talked about Trubisky at length. Bucks are going to get Jameis Winston back, but it sure looks like Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to get the start. I don't know why they would bring Winston back in at this point for how good Fitzpatrick has been. You know, let's start on the Bucks side. They put up a ton of points this season. Vegas does see them going into the Bears and having trouble. The Bears defense has been awesome this season. I know it's very early in the season, and so you need to take some of the stuff for what it's worth. And they still rank number one in DVOA through 3 weeks. So, okay, they did play the Packers. So it's not like they played nobody's so far this season. I know Rodgers got hurt that game and they lost. But the defense with Khalil Mack, that was clearly why they brought him over in the trade. It's paying dividends. They said this is the final piece we need to just have like a just true lockdown defense. And it sure looks like that's what's happening here. Vegas sort of sees it the same way with the Tampa Bay total. How worried are you with Tampa Bay going into a defense like this? And then on the flip side, we talk about Trubisky. Are there other pieces of the Bears you like? I will say one injury news here. Anthony Miller is out for this week, and I actually don't know. I need to reread the note. I don't know if he's out for this week or the year, but he's definitely not playing this week. And that was a guy that was seeing some targets in the offense. So talk to me about anything you like in this game.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with the Tampa Bay side of the ball. I guess I would go ahead and color myself a not believer in the Tampa Bay offense, which is hard to do given that Fitzpatrick is the first quarterback to ever start a season with 300-400 yard games. But the thing I hate about Tampa Bay is their incredibly one-dimensional approach to offense. In the last 2 weeks, you got 24 carries out of Peyton Barber for 55 yards. Like, that is just so bad. And you have to think, against what appears to be an elite defense in the Bears, that they could somehow find a way to, you know, go after these guys that have not been very good on offense in the passing game either in the past, you know. I will say, I mean, it's going to be tough to call Evans anything less than a great upside player, given what we know of his track record and what he's executed on so far with Fitzpatrick. You know, the efficiency has been better. The yardage has obviously been there, a touchdown in every single game. Still just 7,900. If you think that this is the dawn of a new era for Mike Evans and that he actually is just going to be this solid 10-target-a-game guy who's going to flash 200-yard upside like he has in the past, obviously like 7,900 might be a little too cheap, but I think everyone's going to be dreaming on that upside because I think people will simultaneously underrate the Bears' transition on defense this season and overrate Fitzpatrick's ability to continue to replicate these results. And, you know, if I'm skeptical about the 240 target wide receiver, I'm probably more skeptical about the 6,400 yard passing yard Ryan Fitzpatrick, who also breaks the touchdown record in the process. So not that it all has to come crashing down. Certainly these three data points are somewhat interesting. It's just, I think people have seen it, and therefore it's going to be people are going to have more exposure to this game than they probably should for big tournaments, I guess, is my general suspicion on the Tampa Bay side.
Yep, and they just run into a bad defense, and I just don't like to play. You can get there against bad defenses, but the Bears play slow. They run the ball. We've seen Trubisky throw a lot of short routes that just are eating up clock. So I just don't know if the pace of the game plus the defense is going to get there on the Tampa Bay side. And again, this is the new world order. I'm interested to know what you think about the Bears wide receiver core. Anthony Miller, we had to replace his target share with somebody, and this Kendall Wright's kind of come around again. But Allen Robinson was a guy we liked going into last week. Didn't really happen for him just because he just didn't see the targets. Is he a guy that can we put? And Taylor Gabriel saw 10 targets last week. Robinson saw some targets but just couldn't convert. He went 7 targets, 3 for 50. Guys like Gabriel and Robinson with no Miller. Miller saw 5 targets. Do we want to just siphon off their targets, his targets, maybe a couple to those other guys and put them into like the cash game consideration, knowing Trubisky's been a little more accurate, and also maybe knowing they don't have tons of upside if he's not throwing downfield a lot.
Yeah, I think it's more the issue with the targets being there, but there being almost nothing going on downfield. Like for as efficient as Trubisky's been, I mentioned this on the podcast yesterday, the guy's averaging less than 200 yard passing yards a game. And if there's only 200 passing yards a game to go around, then you need a lot of that in order to pay a reasonable cash game price. I mean, you could argue that maybe the whole team has run a little bit bad here. Like certainly guys like Allen Robinson, 28 targets on the season, turning that into just 191 or 94 passing yards. Like maybe you think that should be higher. I'm not totally sure, but for me, I'm just kind of off it. I think there probably will be upside here because I think a lot of people will be off it. Certainly it doesn't really pass the sniff test that Trubisky should only be averaging less than 200 passing yards a game. And if anyone stands to benefit from that, it's going to be guys like Gabriel and Robinson. But I just think you're kind of sticking your neck out for cash, and it just doesn't seem necessary to me.
Robinson's target share is an interesting one of why it's good to look and see that all targets are not created equal, because he has a 14 target game and then a 7 and a 7. So
yeah, just like Julio Jones, you don't want to be in that spot where it's all concentrated into one game.
And I hate to we harped on this yesterday, but like the difference between average targets per game and median targets per game, he has a pretty wide spread between those two, because obviously he has one of these completely outlier games. Whereas Gabriel, at least Gabriel's targets have been consistent right around the 7 to 8 area all year. So if I think I've, from a cash game perspective, I probably trust Gabriel a little bit more than Robinson, and recognizing maybe Robinson has a little more upside. We talked about Jordan Howard. Do we talk about Jordan Howard a little bit? They give him a lot of carries, not doing a whole hell of a lot with him.
I think we talked about him yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is a place where I want to go. I'd say the way they were using him, he had some upside last week, but he just doesn't get used enough in the passing game to have just complete upside like some of the running backs.
He still has. I mean, anyone who can touch the ball 26 times in a game at 7,200 is going to have upside. And, it doesn't take much. You break a long run. You run up against a slightly worse defense. If you think the Bears kind of slow the Tampa Bay offense down, Tampa Bay could give the Bears a lot of possessions here. Just by virtue of trying to pass a bunch and having, Fitzpatrick threw 20 incompletions last week, right? So you could see a big game at him. Interesting big tournament play for me, but yeah, not a cash game guy.
Moving on, Texans go in and play the Colts. We talked at length about Deshaun Watson as being a cash game play. I sent you a text last night. I was looking at FanDuel Sportsbooks, just player props. They had some plays, but they have some player props about just fantasy points on FanDuel. This is where you could see this kind of coming down the pike with the way sports betting has gone in New Jersey. It's legal here. So I was looking at them. Deshaun Watson with a higher fantasy points prop than Patrick Mahomes this week. I was already bullet. I'd hate to use these things as markers for whether or not I like something or not, because I think player props can be at times a little confusing and people have a very difficult time weighting what they actually mean. But in this case, I guess I like player props when they prove my point, and I don't like them when they don't prove my point. So I guess maybe that's the point I'm trying to make. But with Watson, we talked about him as a cash game play. I maybe was a little hesitant because I was looking at some other guys and I saw that and I was like, oh, now Deshaun Watson, easily the cash game play. Does that give you the same feeling when you see just this random number by a random sports book somewhere, or is it justified? And I don't know. What do you think when I sent you that text last night? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we already had Watson. I hate moving our guys based on this, but it's always nice to... Yeah. No, I know. I mean, sometimes it's a reasonable tiebreaker. I wrote about that in our free ebook, by the way, dfsr.com/ebook. You can get our free ebook on basically how we constructed our NFL system from scratch. But yeah, I think Vegas props are a decent tiebreaker. I think it's okay to, turn to them as a sanity check. Just keep in mind, of course, that Vegas props, and we're talking about FanDuel, synonymously with Vegas here. Not exactly the same thing, but the same concept, which is to say they've got some really smart guys probably putting these props out. They stand to really get their asses kicked if they put the prop in the wrong spot. And given that they're going against the public perception here, I would take it as an even stronger signal because sometimes, a lot of times the reason you don't want to use these things is because they're trying to get money in on both sides and not necessarily trying to guess the exact accurate number of yards in the same way our system would. But yeah, positive signal for sure, and makes me even more bullish on Watson in the Houston passing attack.
Yep, I think you can stack these guys for tournaments. I think you can stack this game for tournaments. Watson, Hopkins, Watson, Fuller. I mean, possibly even all three if you think the game really starts dialing it up in terms of just overall points. There is no Bruce Ellington anymore. Not like that makes a huge difference, but they're just pretty short on overall pass catchers. Lamar Miller has been a guy that they've have wanted to put on the ground. Colts defense was not very good last season, have not made many huge gains, although they haven't been as bad this year. In terms of DVOA, again, very early in the season, so I always caveat these a little asterisk when I say some of these stats for defense, because these defense sometimes does take time with who you play. But their defense has been marginally better. What about the Colts side? We talked a little bit of T.Y. Hilton yesterday about his targets, target share up, conversion rate up, yards down. And we talked about Eric Ebron Ebron practiced yesterday, so it really looks like he's going to play. Nice. I think he's going to be the pretty clear cash game. He'll just be the cash game tight end. Can you talk yourself into Luck? Is he throwing the ball far enough for you? Does he have the upside of the old Andrew Luck? I'm not totally seeing it.
Nah, I mean, they make all the nice words they want about his shoulder strength and whatnot, how much they trust him and so on. But until I see it on the field, that's all that really matters to me. Hilton, you could guess that if you're not running super long routes, that your conversion percentage is going to go up. But I think people are, you know, the people that are high on T.Y. Hilton are doing fuzzy math where they want it both ways, where you want both the high conversion rate and you're dreaming on the downfield upside. And, so much of his playmaking ability in the past came from getting open downfield. And while I'm sure anyone can just catch a ball and break off a long reception, I don't think, I think things need to go right for you for that to happen with Hilton now, where in the past, like if he caught five balls, you're just assuming that he probably topped 120 yards or whatever. So yeah, Hilton at 7,300. I'm just not super, super interested. I'll take Ebron and the double digit targets out of the tight end all day here. And likewise, Luck, I put him sort of in that Trubisky category, I guess, of guys that are more efficient than I thought they would be, throwing the ball more than I thought they would be, but just doing nothing with their actual passes, and therefore not an interesting target for me for big tournaments.
There's a stat in NFL Next Gen Stats has average intended air yards, so just how much you intended to get the ball down the field. It's pretty
sure that's your buddy Pat Mahomes. He's people have been really patting him on the back for intending to throw the ball really far. But
interestingly let me throw some interesting stats out there for you. Ready?
Let's hear.
Highest average intended air yards this year: Mahomes second, Watson first. Watson 12.1, Mahomes 11.6. Dead last is Marcus Mariota, who has a pinched nerve in his hand and can't grip the ball. So I guess we could. They didn't even want to play him, except that Blaine Gabbert died in the first quarter and they had to bring him in, and he just kind of like ran around and threw short passes. Second to last is Andrew Luck at 5.5. Alex Smith looks like he's practically bombing balls compared to what Luck's doing. So Luck is Smith is at 6.6. Luck is at 5.5. The bottom of this list is just like all the quarterbacks you would just never in a million years want on your team. The bottom of the list of average intended air yards: Marcus Mariota, Andrew Luck, I'm going to skip Garrett, Derek Carr, no thanks, Sam Bradford on the bench, Blake Bortles, no thanks, Eli Manning, Alex Smith, and then you finally get the Cousins with a quarterback you like to see. So I don't know if average intended air yards, that's a pretty damning stat against Luck, I think, right now. The accuracy is there, and I just don't know what kind of upside you're getting for him. All right, let's move on. Jets move in and go and play the Jags. I did write up a Nunwa. I'm getting a little bit more concerned just because this 15.5 total for the Jets. Yeah, it's so low. I have a good case for Anunua in that he looks like he's going to avoid the two lockdown corners that the Jags have. And I'm like, ugh, are they even going to see the ball enough for the volume to be there? This one's a very close one for me. We're right on the money with the team's implied total. And Anunua's seen so much of the target share that I get why the numbers like it. And I'm just like, do we want to play a receiver with a team that doesn't look like they're going to score at all? So I don't know. I can probably figure out a way to talk myself out of that. On the Jag side, Fournette practice, I think they're going to get him back. I mean, let's say Fournette plays. Does this do anything for us one way or the other? Like, I don't even know what I know what to make of this team, because it seems like they have a plan, and I'm just not sure if much of it is fantasy relevant.
Yeah, no, not, certainly not much of it is fantasy relevant. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, with the way the Jaguars stifled the pass last season, it's going to be tough to feel too bullish on Darnold and the passing attack here on the Jets side. It's just tricky with Ananobi, man. He's just so cheap, and he doesn't rate to line up against Bowie or Ramsey. So, like, if the Jags ultimately decide that they've just had enough of him being thrown the ball, Ananobi, one of those guys with 29 targets on the season so far this year, it stands to reason that they could just take him away if they really wanted to. And you just don't know for sure that, you know, the threat of Robbie Anderson and Terrell Pryor, whoever else, right, is enough to draw these better quarterbacks off of him. Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, certainly something needs to go right in order for the Ananobi play to play off. And if you just, I don't know that you can take touchdowns off the table altogether, but if you're saying that the Jets are going to score a touchdown in this game, it'd be pretty irresponsible to just guess that Ananobi would be the guy who would get it, given his usage in the red zone. So, yeah, no, I could see definitely the case against him. I think it's just ultimately comes down to whether you can find other guys in that same price range that you feel like are even safer. So, you know, taking Ananobi out of the vacuum and just comparing him against whoever else it is you do want to play. And
well, I'll give you a this guy or that guy. Would you rather
a little
play
name game? Yeah. Shout out to my boys at the ESPN, our friends over at the ESPN podcast. Check them out. Give them a little download. They could use it.
So. Would you rather play Ananobi or Calvin Ridley? Ridley 600 more.
I'd rather play Ananobi.
Okay. Would you rather play Ananobi or Randall Cobb saw double digit targets last week?
That's a close one. I think I would go... Well, we haven't gotten to Cobb yet. Cobb's a funny one because they run up against some pretty darn good defenses. Still got the targets. Hasn't really been doing much with them. I'll go Cobb. I think
he's 800 more, so it's not an exact one because
he's the same on FanDuel.
Oh, on FanDuel. I was looking at DraftKings where Ananobi was 4,300. The real savings on Ananobi here is on DraftKings at 4,300. If you think a guy is going to see like 8.5 plus targets,
I'm going to play Ananobi
at 4,300.
On DraftKings at 4,300. Sorry, I thought we were talking about FanDuel. I think he's a great play on DraftKings just because the target share should still be there. So even if he only catches 6 balls and turns it into 50 yards, starting with those 6 points for free, like again, they're going to have to do something, right? Like the plan just can't be to line up and just hand the ball to Isaiah Crowell and Bilal Powell the whole time, right? Like, that's not going to get you home. So, yeah, I'll play him on DraftKings, but you can go ahead if there's other guys in that price range.
Yeah, okay, I'll move on. All right, Dolphins go in and play the Patriots. Did the Patriots stink? I don't know what to make of the Patriots. They're 1-2. They have a negative point differential on the season. The losses haven't been exactly to world-beating teams. They beat by the Lions. They scraped out a win against the Texans, you could say, in Watson's first game back, and they lost to the Jags kind of handily. I mean, at some point, look, this happens with teams every year, and especially with the Patriots, it's like, oh, is this the year it's over? Some year it's going to end.
Well, when your best player is super old, that's just going to happen. Like,
right.
You just can't – there's a reason no one's in the NFL who's 50, right? So Brady's not 50 yet, but he's on the way, and he's looked terrible. There's no way to sugarcoat it. The last two games have been horrendous. Obviously, it's a different set of personnel there now, too. And, you know, we had big hopes for guys like Chris Hogan, totally unfounded, by the way, to Hogan so far. In a year where everyone else is, like you're talking about, should we give guys 14 targets a game? Hogan's had 14 targets on the season.
Yeah, he's been crazy bad. I was really high on him going into the season. This has been as bad.
My poor brother Chris, you drafted Hogan for Chris in his season-long fantasy draft, and he is kicking himself now, Doug.
It's been as bad as you could possibly have assumed it would be. Now
by the way, Gronk's been terrible, too. Let's not throw Hogan under the bus. Gronk, 5 targets last week, 4 targets the week before that. The guy's complete garbage from a DFS perspective. He's still 8,100. You're going to have to... If you want to play anyone outside of Sony Michel in this game, you're really sticking your neck out, is my opinion. And I think you can probably play him. I think everyone else, yeah, sure, dream on the upside. You know, there's a chance, like if we're throwing dirt on the Patriots too early, then you're going to get them at lower ownership now. Because as soon as they come back, they're going to all be right back to their old ownership levels. I'm definitely not touching anyone in the passing game. And really only Michelle's a consideration for me.
Yeah, I think so. They're -7 favorites. I think that's built solely on the back of the Patriot name at this point. I could be wrong. Evaluating lines like this is a very tricky thing, obviously. And man, a team that's 1-2 that has like an old ass quarterback that's looked really bad, if you just take the name off of it and just put the stats up of what the team has done this season, there's no possible way this team would be a 7-point favorite over the Dolphins, who, by the way, are like, the Dolphins have a great record, great point differential. They've kind of played a cupcake schedule so far. They've had a lot of things sort of go their way. Like the Raiders had a fly across the country, played a hot game. I can't remember. I'm not looking at their schedule right now. I know because I looked at it last night that they have not played very good teams so far. So I played Titans week one. So the, yeah, I don't know. This line seems to be wrong to me. I'm not sure I want to get anything in on the Dolphins side. Tannehill has been very efficient, has thrown to just a lot of different guys. There's not really been any fantasy just breakout game for the way they're not throwing many passes. They're playing very tight, just short routes, throwing to a lot of different guys. Gore and Drake are basically splitting carries. Not sure I see much on the way of fantasy stuff for the Dolphins. And I really think, look, I'm putting out a betting premium article this week. I'm just going to give, there's going to be a bunch of bets in it. I think the Dolphins could win this outright, and I think the seven line is nuts. I don't know. Maybe Brady proves me wrong, and that's happened in the past with when we think it's all over for him, and they just kind of turn something around with him and Belichick, and this line seems just, it just seems totally wrong to me. So anyway, give a little bit, that's a premium article, but giving a little piece of that away. All right, let's keep moving through some of these 1 o'clock games. Detroit goes in and plays Dallas. Dallas is a -3 favorite. At home, we talked about Zeke yesterday. I don't know if there's anything you can do with the Dallas passing game at this point. They just don't throw to anybody. Dak looks horrible. I don't know. That's the only reason I like Zeke is because it seems like he's the only guy that they should even think about giving the ball. And then we talked.
And they're passing to him, too.
They're passing still to him some more.
Carries and he's getting the targets as well. Yeah.
We talked about Tate and Galladay as possible cash game plays. Their projections did come down a little bit. Is the line on this game too? I mean, we talked about Tate, but I mean, can you still get some fantasy stuff in there? Like, if you're going to play Elliott, let's say you wanted to play Elliott, could you stack the Lions going the other way here as a tournament upside play?
Yeah, I think so. I think the story you tell yourself, I often think about this way, like with our premium chat and things like that, is that you have to be able to construct a story where your lineup gets the highest possible score on the day, right? Because especially with these super top-heavy million-dollar tournaments, a lot of your equity, as crazy as it sounds, is in that first-place prize. And so if you construct a lineup that can't come in first place, then you've really done yourself a disservice. And one of the ways it gets there is Zeke goes absolutely off, the Lions wind up playing catch-up, and you get there on the back of your wide receiver-quarterback combination. And that, I think the Lions are a respectable team for that. There's pretty good consolidation of targets. We've seen some upside from Tate and Galladay. We've seen Marvin Jones Jr. It's kind of been annoying, actually, because he's taken a bit of a backseat role, but he's still catching touchdowns. So that kind of throws some shade on this one for me. But one thing I just want to go off and say, this kind of relates to the Dallas offense too, is the one thing that's abundantly clear to me right now is that you just don't need to stick your neck out with garbage passing games. Given how many teams are throwing the ball and giving guys 10 targets a game, you just don't need to ever click on the Dallas wide receivers when you see what's going on there. You just don't. And sure, like there's a chance, I get, there's always a chance for big tournaments that this, that, or the other thing happens, but you're hoping and wishing if you think that Dallas is the team that's going to get you home. The guy that they're targeting the red zone, Tavon Austin, they're throwing at him, but never ever anywhere else. Like you got to stay away from that team. But yeah, Detroit, all interesting as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think this makes for interesting GPP stacks. I think you can go Elliott and Dallas defense. I think that's the Dallas defense is coming very cheap on both sites against a Detroit team that will, Stafford can throw interceptions. They're going to throw the ball, presumably, a lot. The pace will be slow, which should keep the score down. So I don't actually mind stacking that. And like you said, I don't mind stacking some of those wide receivers going back the other way. They have good conditions basically in the dome, or the mostly dome in Dallas. I think there's some for a game that doesn't have a crazy high total, which is what we usually look for to hit big upside. I do think there's a bunch of ways you can stack this game and still hit. Some pretty big scores. 1 o'clock game, Buffalo goes in and plays Green Bay. Buffalo, obviously coming off that huge, crazy, just out of nowhere stomping of the Vikings last week. They do come in again. Vegas isn't buying it. Green Bay is still -9.5-point favorites. Now, the Vikings, it's interesting about what this line would have been, because the Vikings were like 16.5-point favorites against Bills going into last week. Where the line would have sat if they had just kind of taken care of business, maybe the line would be somewhere in there. So I'm not sure if this is one game getting them closer to just not being a terrible team. What do you see from Buffalo here? Josh Allen just kind of ran all over the place, put up fantasy points. I'm not in a way that seems recreatable to me personally, but maybe you see it differently.
Listen, if you're going to run the ball 9 times a game, like, you're going to have fantasy upside. If you want to call him a a homeless man's Cam Newton or something like that. I think that's not a terrible comp. The completion percentage is similar. You know, what he's able to do on the ground, the fact that he had two rushing touchdowns. You don't know that he lost three fumbles against Minnesota, but, you know, you're just kind of signing yourself up for the potentially big upside game and just the total blow up as well. I think from Allen, like if you're going to play him for big tournaments, just play him as a standalone quarterback. You don't need to pair any of these other guys with him. And for that reason, you don't really need to consider anyone else on the Buffalo side, really, for any format, as far as I'm concerned.
What about Green Bay? It looks like they're going to put up points. We've seen Rodgers was, you know, people thought he is playing hurt and still played pretty well. It seems like it's Aaron Rodgers, not the guy. He threw 44 times last week, only ran the ball two times. It's something we've wanted to see a little bit more out of him in the past. But in a game where it looks like they're going to be winning, they also have Jamal Williams, who still looks like he's the lead back. Snaps 30. Aaron Jones 17, Ty Montgomery, those don't really count because I think he was more split out in his 20 carries. Is there anything you like here from maybe the Rodgers in the passing game? We mentioned Cobb briefly. Davante Adams has still been a very big target guy on the season, one of the elite guys. He caught a touchdown last week, 7 for 52 and a touchdown. Anything you like against the Bills here? They're not teams that's showing up high in our projections, and yet they still have a lot of possibly points going up on the Vegas side.
You know, I like the Green Bay offense. I especially like them for big tournaments here. I think that generally right now they're looking pretty underrated. Their strength of schedule against the pass has been really, really hard these first 3 weeks of the season. Washington, Chicago, and Minnesota all ranked in the top 9 in terms of passing yards allowed last season. Chicago, I mean, no one would argue that they've improved their defense coming into this year as well. And the fact that they've still been serviceable is a really positive sign for me. And I think the biggest guy I'm looking at for potential breakout week here is Davante Adams. He's another one of these guys, in spite of drawing the best corners on all three of these matchups so far, 29 targets, turning that into 3 touchdowns, a very solid floor for fantasy purposes. 15 fantasy points has been his worst game on this season. I think he's a guy knocking on the door of being in that elite group of 10-plus targeted game guys who is also turning it into 100-yard games. And obviously his red zone usage is excellent too. So this could very well be, like Rodgers, obviously like the price can't go up too much higher than that, although we've seen him crest over 9,000 in the past. But something like a Rodgers-Adams stack seems very appealing to me. And particularly, you know, Cobb being sort of questionable with his lingering hamstring injury, limited on Thursday's practice, just increases the upside for Adams for me too. So yeah, big believer in Adams, big believer in Rodgers, and I think this could be a breakout week for the Green Bay offense.
Yep, and I think, you know, you mentioned the passing defense that they played so far, right? So far, early season, obviously, Chicago ranks 3rd, Washington mm-hmm. ranks 8th, and Minnesota ranks 9th. So that's gonna drop now after last game, night's game from Goff. But going into last night, these were still all, on this season, top 10 teams against the pass, and they'd all played Aaron Rodgers. So I think that that does say something about the strength of the schedule that they have run up against. They've run up some against some good defenses so far, and I think that's why you're seeing this Vegas total pushing up toward 28 right now. Buffalo, you know, 22nd against the pass this season. I don't know how much we can make of their game last week, really. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think this game will go relatively under-owned because people will look at the spread and think, oh, it's going to be a blowout and Rodgers is going to be there and some of these other guys maybe just stand out a little bit more. I think we may probably end up seeing lower ownership than we should on Rodgers, which makes for an interesting stack. I actually don't mind even stacking him in the Green Bay defense, though, to be honest, that doesn't really correlate very well. It's typically running backs and defenses that correlate a little bit better than quarterbacks and defenses, but just because of the way the game's scripted out. But yeah, no, I think you make a compelling case here for Rodgers. Wouldn't shock me to have him be among the leaders when it's all said and done in fantasy points, and I could see the ownership being lower than it should be. All right, Eagles go in and play the Titans. They are 3.5-point favorites. Injuries stuff going here with the Eagles. I'll try to sum it up. JJ looks like he's going to play, but he has like a fractured back, so I don't know what that means. It looks like Alshon Jeffrey might come back this week. I don't know what that does for the passing game. The Eagles just too much in a state of flux right now to really trust it. Tennessee's defense has been decent this year. The quarterback play aside, they play pretty slow. They played a 9-6 game against the Jags last week and it's been one. So I doesn't look like there's a ton of points going up on the board. The Eagles last year were a team that were tough to trust from a fantasy perspective because they kind of just wanted to get everyone involved. They had a lot of different guys running the ball, had a lot of guys different guys catching passes. Do we see that maybe starting to come back to last year's thing where you really can't, if they're getting healthier, can we not really trust them, especially the position players from a fantasy perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you necessarily want to trust these guys for cash games, you know, with Ertz being a notable exception there. We talked about him yesterday. If for whatever reason Ebron doesn't wind up being in that tight end one slot, I think he is the next best cash game play from my perspective. And when you talk about upside, any tight end that's going to get 13 targets in a game and turn it into 11 receptions and be a reasonable downfield option and the best red zone option on the team, he's going to have upside. So I think you can still target Ertz almost regardless of the opposing defense for big tournament purposes. And, you know, I think we can see better of Wentz going forward too. He wasn't incredible in his first game back, but, you know, that's pretty understandable getting back up to game speed and so forth. So, yeah, not a believer for cash games, unfortunately, but I do think for tournaments, you could see it. Real quick, I do want to address the running game on the Philly side as well. We were kind of guessing. It's so funny. On the podcast, you can hear us and our concerns about the Eagles running game, talking about how, you know, when one running back goes down, it doesn't necessarily lend itself to perfect opportunity for anyone else. You did see a timeshare between Clement and Smallwood last week. I think, you know, you can still live with the 16 carries and four targets from Clement on a $5,300 price tag, but Smallwood's increased usage, I think, at least speaks to the fact that that can't be considered a safe play. It could easily go the other way. And, you know, unfortunately, that's going to make it a pretty questionable but very interesting big tournament play.
I said it last week to you and to anyone that would listen, which is like only like three or four people in my life that want to actively listen to me talk about football stuff. My wife is not one of them. But
there's very few people that want to talk to me about football stuff the right amount, I've noticed. It's like you. And then outside of that, it's like people who want to talk to me about it way too much. Okay, people just have no clue. Like this guy at my...
He might listen.
Party I went to. Don't want to call anyone out specifically in case this guy listens. But yeah, people want to either talk to me way too much about football or not enough. So that's...
it was not going to shock me if we just get this first Eagles series last, after playing Clement in cash games, to just see Smallwood go out and take the first like two series and bingo bango, that's exactly what happened.
So, you did actually.
I just had a feeling. The usage was still there for Clement, but he just didn't totally get there. All right, let's move on to the 4 o'clock games. Seattle goes in and plays Arizona in a game I can't imagine anyone's going to want to watch, although I guess Josh Rosen coming out and playing is some people are going to want to see what they have there. I think the Seahawks look like they're going to get Doug Baldwin back, though he has said that he's not going to be 100% at any point in the season, and that was when he thought he was like healthy enough to start playing, and that really hasn't been the case. So this game has a 39 total. It did come up from 37.5. I don't think I want any part of this. I mean, the only thing that I want your opinion on, Chris Carson carried the ball a ton last week. It seemed like he should have been the guy, like just sort of lead back territory for the Seahawks here. They had been just not unwilling to do it. The Rashad Penny thing was just kind of still hanging around, but last week Carson outsnapped Penny 50-10, out carrying him 32-3. He went for 102 yards and a touchdown. Where do we want to put his just overall usage going forward? That's a guy that he was really close, even at like 11 carries and 2.5 targets. It was very close to cash games for us for DraftKings last week because he was so cheap. He was like in the low 4,000s, and I just couldn't do it because I was distrustful of mostly Pete Carroll, not because I didn't think Carson would be able to get there on the price if given the opportunity. It was mostly because I just didn't think Pete Carroll has like any clue of like what he wants to do at this point in the season. But now he maybe did tip his hand that he wants to. Is he a guy that we want to maybe be bullish on carries going forward? They are favorites here, even though they're on the road.
Yeah, Carson right now listed as questionable for what it's worth, was limited in Wednesday's practice with a hip issue. The 32 carries you love to see. You don't really love to see the continued, and this has just been the way Carson's been basically throughout his NFL career, but not super efficient when he does get the ball in his hands. I think if he has the green light and you know he's going to be out there, knowing that this is in play really raises his floor dramatically because, you know, you don't need 30 carries to pay off your price, right? So I think, yeah, totally reasonable cash game option there.
4,600 is 100 more than Michelle. I would rather trust Sony Michelle just because of the team and the just playing at home and the odds favorite. And if he out carried him by double, it wouldn't shock me, right? Like, I don't think we're going to see 30 carries out of Sony Michelle. We've seen a game where Seattle's been willing to do it with Carson. So I think that that's always one that's tough for me to evaluate. It's like, who has the higher floor? Oh, well, I think it's clear that, okay, let me rephrase. Who has a higher floor? Who has a higher ceiling? I think that clearly Carson has the higher ceiling because I just don't think we see this kind of usage. I just don't think the Patriots are going to do that with a running back. But Yeah, I guess now the question is, who has the higher floor? Are there too many question marks about Michelle? Like, I'm saying this because they're basically the same price on DraftKings, and we have Michelle in a lot of lineups. Would it be reasonable to kind of swap those two, because we've just seen what the Seahawks will do in a situation where they're winning and they're just going to give the guy the ball 30 times?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair take. I don't really have much more to add.
Okay, well, thanks, buddy. Jeez, not the best in the business for nothing. All right, Browns go in and play the Raiders.
Sorry, do you want me to repeat everything you said and pretend like it's new?
Nah, not really. But okay. One more last thing about, I think you consider playing either defense from this game. I think both of these offenses are so bad that I wouldn't even care about playing like the Cardinals on the cheap. Just if they're getting the new quarterback, sure. If they Rosen lights a fire at all, it's going the other way. The Seahawks defense against a rookie quarterback on a team that seems kind of completely clueless about how they want to do their personnel, like how they wanted to throw Sam Bradford out to be their starting quarterback to start the season and never give the arguably the best running back in the game the ball at all. That's a team that strikes me as just having no clue about what they're doing. So,
oh yeah, Larry Fitz disappearing act last week. This is not a situation.
I mean, this team is so garbage. So I don't know. I think that's all to say. I think you can play both defenses. All right, 4 o'clock. Browns go in and play the Raiders. Browns obviously get Baker Mayfield under center this week. They're forces Hugh Jackson's hand simply because Tyrod's hurt. I'm not sure we would have seen Baker this early. He was electric coming in against engineering a comeback against the Jets last week on Thursday night. They are underdogs to the Raiders here. I hate the Raiders, and I think they're terrible. They have played some close games, though, and you can argue that they maybe should have won a game or two of the year. They went into Denver. They had to fly across the country to Miami. Those are both close games. I really want to hate the Raiders, and I really want them to go to 0-16 because I think their personnel is so bad.
Jeez.
And yet, I also bet them the under 6 wins, so I've liked the way things have shaken out so far. And I don't know, like 2.5-point favorites means that Vegas is a little unsure. It's a little tough to make about how good the Browns are, too. Like, they could be 3-0. I don't know. What do you think about this game? We talked about Jarvis Landry at length. Anything else to like here from a fantasy perspective?
Yeah, Jarvis Landry is the main guy I like from this from a fantasy perspective. Worth noting on Carlos Hyde is that he is just right up there in terms of total attempts on the season. Not really used in the passing game, but if you think the Browns take the lead here, I think he's an interesting play. You know, he's not a sexy name, hasn't put up huge fantasy totals just yet, but the floor has absolutely been there, and he's being used in the red zone. You know, he's got one touchdown in every game and two touchdowns against the Jets, so playable there as well. As far as Mayfield's concerned, you know, you just never know. Like, he's just young, 23 passing attempts. People always use their young quarterbacks conservatively, it seems like. So it could just go either way. He could explode. He could be the same. Not really. Outside of, I really love Landry. I like Hyde for tournament purposes. Nothing else on the Browns for me.
Marshawn Lynch has been a top 8 guy in carries this year. He's averaging 16 carries a game so far. Actually, they are throwing to him a little bit. He's averaging over 2 targets per game. It's not a ton, but really, it's not a guy that you have expected to catch balls in the past. Any interest in him at all, like from just a volume perspective? And then we have the Raiders receiving core, who just another year of like not knowing what the hell Amari Cooper's ever going to do. Jordy Nelson had a great first quarter and kind of disappeared. Anything you like from the Raiders side from a fantasy perspective?
Man, not especially. I mean, I think Lynch, you can see a game where he has a huge game, right? I mean, touchdown in every game so far. The total attempts have been there overall. The efficiency has been just abysmal on him too. Like 19 carries for 64 yards last week, 18 for 65 the prior week. So, you know, again, it's tough to kind of dream on the upside, but mostly upside comes from opportunity, especially around the goal line. And he has that. So he's in the group of guys you can consider playing. The targets, yeah, I'm not a believer in the targets just because they've been using Jalen Richard as the third down back.
Oh, yeah.
11 targets in week one and then 7 targets last week. So I just don't think you can. That's another thing that cuts into Lynch's upside, basically. So, yeah, not excited about the Raiders, but obviously there's a few guys you can pick and choose and kind of dream on something good happening for them.
All right, Saints go in and play the Giants. It's a 425 prime. Well, not that's a the 425 highlighted game here. Saints are they start as a -3.5 road favorite with an over under of 50. So they have New Orleans coming in with one of the higher team totals, but not the highest. It's interesting to note of this main slate of games. There are 3 or 4 teams that actually are coming in at slightly higher implied totals. We talked about Kamara as probably just being a cash game lock at this point. Talked about Breeze as being a cash game consideration, though for the price, you maybe just want to go Watson if Breeze is going to be out of the conditions that we saw him in. And then we talked about Michael Thomas and just the crazy conversion rate that we've seen from him this year. Is there anything else to even think about on the Saints? They're often so concentrated at this point that you're just basically just taking dart throws and guys like Cam Meredith or Ben Watson in their pass game. And then we can pivot over and talk about the Giants as a possible GBP upside play.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big three on the Saints, it's kind of reminiscent of like the Roethlisberger-Brown-Bell combination at the moment, where they're just finding ways to get the ball into those guys' hands, and it's giving those guys tremendous fantasy upside. Not worried about the Kamara injury, by the way. It's in an age where everyone is listed as questionable with the new NFL reporting rules from last year. You just got to take some of those with a grain of salt. He was a full participant in Thursday's practice, so nothing to worry about there. Will he see 20 targets a game going forward? No, he just simply will not. Will he see 20-plus touches a game, I think, is a better question, and it looks like he will. So, you know, he, Breeze, and Thomas are all going to be great plays, and unfortunately they probably take too much of the juice here for anyone else to be a reasonable, you know, obviously like anyone can have a game in any given Sunday, but in terms of the reasonable guys you could forecast, it's just those guys.
They moved Thomas around enough that he'll probably just be able to avoid Janoris Jenkins and the rest of the Giants secondary. Eli Apple's out. They rate pretty poorly. So the Saints have been very good about getting Thomas into matchups away from whoever can actually cover sure. in the other team. So I do not see, and the Giants are not usually willing to move Janoris into a shadow coverage role. So I think that he's going to be able to avoid that, and that still gives him a lot of upside. Now, the Giants are interesting here. Saquon Barkley, we took a wait-and-see approach on him just to start the season, which I think is prudent just because you're not exactly sure. Are we enough into the season now? This guy has 46 attempts, and he's got 67 total look. No, excuse me, that's wrong. He's got more than that. Looked at the receptions. He has 73 total looks on the season, which is about as good as you're going to see in the game. This is we're talking elite numbers here. Is he a cash game play? Like, I don't know. We talked about Zeke Elliott. Is Saquon maybe just a better play? They're right around the same price on FanDuel. We have Saquon for less for various reasons. But I mean, could you see Barkley just being a safer play than Elliott the way the Giants have used him this year?
Yeah, you can make a case for it. I think you have to be concerned about his efficiency in terms of yards per carry as well. Basically, it's one big run from the first game against Jacksonville that props up the whole season total. In terms of like just a down in, down out back, he's just not been very strong that way. He's obviously been pretty prominently featured in the passing game when you take averages over the course of the whole season. But it's been a very high variance approach, like, you know, 16 targets, and then 5 targets. Probably the real number for him is around like 6 targets per game, which is still excellent if you're going to pair it with 15 carries a game, which is probably what's responsible. The $8,000 price tag doesn't look too bad. And the most assuring thing about Barkley, I suppose, is that 16 target game came when they were behind. So the plan seems to be to try to get Barkley the ball on the ground in close games and just to continue to go to him through the air in games that even get totally out of hand. So yeah, I like Barkley. I think he's a solid play. Definitely another guy I was a little bit more bearish on to start the season, I guess, relative to the field. I still stand by that. I think it was probably pretty nuts to take him as a top 5 back overall in your season long draft. But I think he's fine. The guy I'm more interested in from this game probably is Odell Beckham Jr. I think he's a guy for big tournament purposes that people are utterly sleeping on. The target share is still there, averaging 12 targets a game so far this season, doing so pretty consistently. The yardage has been fine. It just hasn't had any touchdowns. So, unless you think he's going to finish the season with 1,500 yards and no touchdowns, you're going to have a week where his ownership is not representative of what he's capable of from an upside perspective from the not too distant past, and in a great matchup in what could be a high flying matchup with the Saints. So yeah, I love Beckham for big tournaments this week.
Yeah, the Saints have kind of been shredded through the air this year too. I know they were a very good pass defense last year, kind of sort of out of nowhere. That has not translated at all, even close this season. Now they've played 3 games in domes. They ranked dead last in pass defense according to DVOA to start the season, and one of those games was against Tyrod Taylor and the Browns. So it's not like I get that they played the Falcons and they got shredded, but they got shredded by the Bucs in week 1 as well. So they've been good against the run. They're actually number 1 against the run, but that's mostly just, I think, because teams have just been, they're just like, dude, we'll just pass like all day long against you. right. So I think that this is a very high upside game for Beckham. I think you could see, I think there's a situation where you could even possibly stack Barkley and Beckham together and feel if they, especially if they're playing from behind, which stands to reason they will be, that seems to have a lot of upside. I think Rhett Ellison is an interesting DraftKings flyer just because he's going to take over some of the Evan Ingram role, just at least at tight end for the snaps, mostly because he's just so cheap, 2,700. If you thought he was just going to be on the field for 70% of Ingram snaps, I don't think that might even be too high. I think that there's, sure, he can probably close to get there on his price. And like I said yesterday, they did throw to him in the red zone when he took over for Ingram when after he got hurt. So a lot to like about this game. I think this is a game that you're going to see as a very popular stack. And I'm with you on the Beckham thing. I think that we could be seeing a breakout game at some point, and it wouldn't be it just very well could be this one. This is a very bad defense, or this is a good defense to target with a passing game. Last game here, San Francisco goes in and play the Chargers. With no Jimmy G, the San Francisco 49ers are now 10.5 point underdogs on the road to the Chargers. Their season is effectively over. They're going to start CJ Beathard at quarterback. I think we can write off the fantasy prospects, at least for right now, of the entire Niner team. And it's a real shame because we had pretty high hopes for them going into the season about what they could accomplish with Jimmy G under center. That's not going to be the case. Now, with the Chargers, 10.5 point home favorites is really where is an area where we are very interested in playing running backs, especially against teams that do play at faster paces. Now, they played at a faster pace when they had Jimmy G, but this is kind of what the offense wants to do as well. Does that put Melvin Gordon into the cash game perspective? Because he checks all the boxes of big home favorite, guy who gets carries, and I'm just not totally sure I trust it on the volume this season.
Yeah, Gordon's a funny one. The volume has been, it's been kind of up and down, but if you trust that also the Chargers game scripts have been so wonky and the matchups have been so weird, it's just hard to know what to make of it. Nobody could have foreseen the Chargers going into that first game against Kansas City. That just wound up being the craziest game that they possibly could have imagined, right? Like, Mahomes just comes out and is the reincarnation of, prime Peyton Manning. Like, what were they supposed to do in that game, right? Then they go into a Buffalo game, and the Bills are just like a nonstop weird matchup just because their offense was just so horrendous in that game, and the Chargers didn't really need to do much. Gordon still winds up punching in 2 touchdowns through the air. And then they go up against the Rams, who have a really, really strong defense. So I don't really know that we know enough about Melvin Gordon yet and his like sort of average usage going forward. And so I think that we can probably just count on him being a reasonably high volume, relatively low efficiency play going forward. And at 8,700, is he the guy I want to just pay up for 8,700 for? The guy who just only touched the ball 17 times last week and 15 times the time before that? No, I don't think so. I think he'd need to be in a tremendous matchup for me to really want to go there. And, I would have a hard time looking in the mirror and paying 87 for him while Kamara's sitting there at 9,100, I guess is my major thought here.
Yeah, it wasn't like an if him, then it wasn't like if or. It was like, do you play them both? I think if there's a guy like that.
It ultimately is if or though, right? Are you going to go double? You're going to go Gordon and Kamara for cash games this week? That's hard.
He's 500 more than Elliott, and right now Elliott is in it's Kamara and Elliott in our top FanDuel lineups. I don't think it's just the difference of maybe spending down on one of these wide receivers. I don't think it's a totally crazy number. I do wonder if when it's all said and done, if Gordon is just higher owned than Elliott. Like, it wouldn't shock me to go in and see, be like, oh man, Melvin Gordon 50%. Like, I
really
don't think that's going to be the case. Yeah, I mean, I've been at times surprised by ownership numbers. I don't think it'll be the case on DraftKings where he's just 600 more than Elliott, and you are talking about a pretty high price. I don't know. This one wouldn't shock me if we walked in and it was like 45% cash game Melvin Gordon because of like, who they're playing and the home favorites and all that stuff. I'm not saying it's going to happen, and could we be sweating down a Melvin Gordon game in cash games late in the game, late on Sunday?
Maybe.
We very well could be. One thing also,
Zeke more touches this season, 500 cheaper. I don't know. Just also better track record from the past too. It seems I wouldn't be sweating it if I saw both of those. Yeah, you can get burned whenever the chalk goes away from you, but I wouldn't be uncomfortable in that spot.
Just because we mentioned it before with Deshaun Watson in the FanDuel Sportsbook running back prop, Gordon with a higher prop than Elliott. Melvin Gordon 20.5, Elliott 19.5. So take that for what it's worth. I don't know if that's something information we want to do something with or not. But I mentioned it for the Watson thing because it helped my argument, and I will mention here for the Gordon thing because it does not help my argument, and we can discuss about whether or not we want to we want to adjust anything accordingly. All right, we're going to get out of here. We did the main slate of games. There are some interesting primetime ones with Baltimore going in and play Pittsburgh. That game's got a pretty high total at 51, and then we got a 55 total on Monday night with Kansas City going in and playing Denver. So going to be plenty of reasons to get in stuff on the main or on those primetime slates, I think. Those you can go over. We'll be in our chat room during those points. You can obviously get optimal lineups for those ones as you select by slate. So just go over to dfsr.com/deals, and you will get that free free for 3 days, and then just $24.95 a month special podcast deal that covers our podcast listeners. All right, buddy. Enjoy week 4 in the NFL. I think it's going to be a good one, and we will be back next Tuesday recapping the week that was.
Sounds good, man. Later.